New World Witchery is a Patreon-supported podcast.
To pledge your support, please visit patreon.com/newworldwitchery.
Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
On this episode, we'll be looking at curanderismo, the Hispanic American folk healing and magical tradition. We'll have an interview with an expert and a few other little things along the way to pique your interest in this fascinating tradition. Stay tuned. Buenos dias, buenas tardes, buenas noches, and bienvenido to everyone. Welcome to New World Witchery. This is Corey flying solo. Tonight we are heading into the borderlands of the United States and Mexico to explore the subject of curanderismo. We've talked about curanderismo before with the lovely Canarian curandera Carolina Gonzalez. Tried saying that three times fast. But as with a lot of different types of folk magic, there is just so much that one episode can hardly scratch the surface of the subject. So in this episode, we're going to be talking to another expert, Professor Eliseo Cheo Torres, who works at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque, offers courses on the history and practice of curandero healing practices, I should say. I also wrote the book on the subject, quite literally. He has a book called Curandero, A Life in the Mexican Folk Healing, or A Life in Mexican Folk Healing, I guess. So that's going to be a really fascinating interview. He was very, very gracious with his time, answered my questions very, very straightforwardly, has a lot of really good information, kind of puts the whole practice into perspective. So it's a good conversation. I think you'll enjoy that. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, might be a good time to mention curanderismo is a method of healing people using a combination of prayers, gestures, herbs, and other alternative therapies. It resembles several other systems of magic and healing found in the New World, such as powwow or even hoodoo to some extent, but it has its own distinct flavor, its own method. And additionally, it's generally seen as work that's only done to provide healing or help to those in need. It's not ever used to cause harm. So the magical counterpart to curanderismo is something called brujería, which is witchcraft, and that can be used to either help or harm. So it kind of that's the one that kind of works both sides of the spectrum. The ailments that you find addressed with curanderismo are often just as particular as the cures. They have problems like susto or soul fright, which requires cures similar to shamanic journeying and other magical systems. Curanderismo, I should say, is tightly woven into the Christian tradition, particularly Catholicism, but sort of the long-standing traditional bonds between Catholicism and Hispanic American and Mexican culture make it so that you're not going to be able to find a whole lot of curanderismo that doesn't at least in some way touch upon certain Christian ideas or names, things like that. But I should also say that the forms of Catholicism and Christianity that you find in curanderismo are usually folk Catholicism. They happen at the folk level and often are against the recommendations of actual church authorities. So you have this really kind of funny line where there's a strong connection to the religious tradition of Catholicism, but it's not necessarily officially sanctioned by Catholicism. So it walks a fine line. We love liminal spaces, right? That's what we do here. Similarly, cures within curanderismo are not recognized by conventional medicine and most certainly are not a replacement for qualified medical advice. Anything we discuss in this episode should not be attempted without consulting a physician first or used as a replacement for evidence-based medicine. Curanderismo is beautiful and it's fascinating, but it is also folklore. That doesn't necessarily mean everything's not true, it just means that everything adapts and changes. You do have information that's frequently unreliable, and oftentimes you have things that are very quirky that don't have reproducible results. So this is not this is not something that you should dive into as a complete replacement for conventional Western medicine. And you most certainly shouldn't be trying any of the cures recommended here without at least consulting with a physician first. So this is not intended as medical advice, legal advice of any kind, obviously. Basically, I'm just saying, enjoy this episode, enjoy this discussion, enjoy learning about this, but be responsible, please. Please. So yeah, with that admonition passed, it's definitely time to dive in. So we'll first hear the interview with Professor Torres. After that, you'll hear a story about one of Curandarismo's most prominent figures, a folk saint known as Don Pedrito. Also share a special amulet based on Curandarismo practices with you, and we'll have some music along the way. So, hope you enjoy. Now, on to the interview. We have with us Professor Cheo Torres of the University of New Mexico. He has written and taught extensively on the practices of Curanderismo, which very loosely defined, I would say, is Mexican-American, Southwestern folk healing and folk medical practices. But I'm going to let him define that a little bit more and talk a little bit more about that. But for right now, I would just like to welcome you. Welcome you very much. Thank you for being on the show with us today, Professor Torres.
Well, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, Corey. Curanderismo, I define curanderismo as a holistic approach to traditional healing, body, mind, and spirit. And the word curanderismo comes from the word curar, which means to heal. And I trace it back, of course, to even before the Spaniards arrived to the New World in 1519. The natives were using plants, rituals, but we didn't call it curanderismo. But I believe it was when the Spaniards brought their own belief system that was borrowed basically from the Moors, who were in Spain some 800, 900 years. So curanderismo is a blend of Moorish traditions, even European traditions, and native traditions. It has all come together and to what it is now. It hasn't been completely lost, especially in many third world countries, and I pretty much specialize in curanderismo of Mexico and the Southwest and how that has blended into the Southwest culture.
Excellent. That's an excellent definition. Thank you. So what are some of the hallmarks of that practice, and how did you come to study this?
Well, it is our first medicine. It comes from the earth. And it's still alive after so many years. It is changed somewhat, but it's still there. It's evolved. And I believe that's what's important about this medicine, that it's not as popular as it was before or after we've specialized in allopathic medicine, and the need is not as prevalent as it was, especially in this country. Now, in other countries, it's still alive and well and probably more popular than it is in this country, but we seem to be reviving it now a little bit more. There's more of appreciation and understanding, a little bit more research than ever.
Where do you think that revival is coming from? Where's that
What do you think is spurring that on?
Well, I think there's different reasons. One is curiosity. What is this? Another one is reclaiming. I call it reclaiming one's culture. And, you know, a lot of young people remember their grandparents or their aunts and uncles using traditional medicine, but they don't understand why and how it was used. So what we have done is we work with many well-known curanderos and instructors of a holistic school of curanderismo in Cuernavaca, Morelos, Mexico. And we've been able to borrow a lot of information from them and some research that they've done. And so now there, we can explain it. We can talk about theories. We can read about it, which wasn't so a few years back. And now I've introduced it at a university level. So I have a credit course. I have a Coursera free course. So it's out there. And people are really enjoying it and trying to appreciate what they didn't understand, many people, what they didn't understand in earlier years. I think that's why it's popular.
Yeah, so the increased information has helped it sort of survive and thrive, it sounds like.
And some of it, if it's done properly, can be very effective. So if they don't get any treatment from allopathic medicine, they try traditional medicine and vice versa. So it's using the best of both medicines.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they can't afford some medications, they rely on traditional medicine.
Mm-hmm. And I've actually taken that the Coursera course, and it was excellent. It was a very, very well-constructed course, very thorough. It's not just, you know, a fly-by summary. It's got a lot of good information and detail in it.
But I started more than 15 years ago with a credit course here at the University of New Mexico. It's in the summer. It's a two-week course. It's all morning for 2 weeks, and then we have afternoon optional classes. And then I offered the Coursera last year, and then I also started offering an online credit course. So there's three ways that people can take this course, and it's become quite popular.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good course. I certainly recommend it. Now, how would you, I mean, you talked about it, sort of where it comes from in terms of its history and origins, but what about the sort of the healing practice? You know, where does that power or where does that healing come from? What's the sort of cosmology of curanderismo?
Well, in earlier years, people believed that you were born with a gift to heal, as they call it, a don, a gift to heal. I don't believe that's true. I mean, people need to study this. And so throughout the years, there's been interest in learning more about this instead of apprenticing under a curandero or there's a sibling that has a calling to learn under a curandero. And that has changed. Now there are schools that train. You do get certificates, especially a school in Mexico called CEDEC, Centro de Desarrollo Hacia la Comunidad, or Human Development Center. And it's trained thousands of healers, not only from Mexico, but from Central South America and a few from Europe. Some of those instructors will come here in the summer and they work with me in my course. They also do workshops. So there's this exchange of healers. And then some of the native healers from here have been to Mexico and have also taught some of their techniques here. So this is a dynamic that is wonderful, that they're sharing a lot of their practices and healing. And now a lot of them give thanks to the Four Directions. And there's a significance in each of the directions, south, north, east, west, Father Sky, Mother Earth. And they understand that the cosmos are part of the healing process. And nature is very important, especially with the plants, the sun, healing with water, so those sorts of things. I think they're going back to some of the Mayan, Aztec belief systems. So that's what I'm beginning to see, and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It's that reclaiming process, like you were saying, sort of reclaiming sort of a spiritual identity as well.
Yeah.
And then, so can you describe maybe just, for example, one type of healing that might be done in Kurandrismo and kind of how that works?
Well, one of the popular ones is what they call, besides herbology, plants are used a lot. And what they do with plants, they use fresh plants, they use dried plants, they make tinctures, which is an alcohol base. Mm-hmm. And that lasts a long time. For people that cannot tolerate alcohol, they use what they call microdosis, which is a water-based technique to prepare the plants. So plants is very, very important to use either the leaves, the roots, the stem, the whole plant, and knowing how to prepare and how to use the plants. And the other healings is, or called limpias or spiritual cleansings, curanderos believe that you are composed of energy, and that energy sometimes gets damaged. You may have a car accident, you may be grieving, whatever happens, that energy is damaged, so they try to smooth that energy and heal that energy. They call it Olympia or spiritual cleansing. And that I find in many cultures, it changes a little bit from culture to culture, but we've had African healers here. They have the same concept. The native healers have the same concept. Some of the Asian healers have a similar concept. So that concept is very important. How do you heal somebody with Olympia? There's many other rituals. There's empacho, or a blockage of the intestines, and there's a massage and certain herbs that you take, especially with babies, and they call it dry empacho, wet empacho. There's manteadas. Manteadas is a shawl alignment, especially for the elderly and for pregnant women and for children. Healing with water, hydrotherapy, healing with the sun also. You can go on and on with all types of healing remedies and rituals that have been lost, and they do take longer than if you were to go to an allopathic physician. They may take half a day, may take a full day. Juice therapy, how do you stay healthy? Traditional massage, the sobadora, the sobador, and several other, laugh therapy, for example, risa terapia, ventosas, which is cupping. Chinese cupping is what people know, but there's a Mexican cupping, which is different from Chinese cupping or ventosas. The temazcal, the use of the sweat lodge, has made a comeback. We have, I think, 3 Mexican sweat lodges in Albuquerque, and people are very curious about heating inside the sweat lodge, which is, they claim it's similar to the womb of Mother Earth. You go into your mother's womb and heal many of your illnesses. Those are some of the things that have been used and are being discussed in our classes.
Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen the so for example the cupping and the shawl alignments are very. There's something that you can definitely see sort of a historical basis for them, but they're also sort of they're different than I think a lot of other people experience in healing practices, like just herbalism and things like that. There's much more physical contact, physical involvement with those healing practices, and I think that's interesting. It's a very hands-on approach.
That's right. There's touching. There's hands-on approach. And people sometimes think they can't do this, but you can if you do it correctly. And if you practice, you can do it on yourself, you can do it with your family, and it can be, if it's done right, it can be very healthy and very therapeutic.
Absolutely. And now, one of the things that I think is interesting is that there are sort of folk heroes or folk saints within the Kurandrismo practice with, for example, Don Pedrito Jaramillo, is one I think you reference in your book. La Teresita as well. What sort of sets those curanderos apart? Do they sort of have a legendary status in the practice? Do people know of them?
Yes. They really don't know that much about them. They know that they're folk saints, or that they're considered saints, but they're really folk saints. They're not recognized by the church. They're not canonized saints.
Right.
And I write about three of them. There's others. Don Pedrito Jaramillo, who came from Jalisco, settled in Texas in a town by the name of Falfurrias. He had a chapel there in the late 1800s, early 1900s, became a very powerful healer in the state. But people were poor back then. There was a need for Don Pedrito. And Teresita lived about the same time Don Pedrito died in the early 1900s. She came from Chihuahua through El Paso, Texas, to New Mexico, to Arizona, moved on to California, San Francisco, even in New York, where she married an American by the name of John Van Order, and became quite popular at that time. And then the last one that I write about is Nino Fidencio. They call him Baby Fidencio. He was a very happy person. He died in 1938. He's the youngest of the three curanderos. There's a following still nowadays that healed the same way that the Nino Fidencio healed. And it's become somewhat of a religion in some parts of Mexico and some parts of the U.S. And the reason I write about him is to appreciate what these healers were doing in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and that this is nothing new, and we can learn from them, from some of their techniques and some of the methods that they used to heal.
Hmm. That's good. I like that. And so why do you think, we've talked a little bit about the sort of revival aspect of this. What value beyond just healing do you think these practices provide for, practitioners or the people who visit, people who practice this? Why is it, becoming more and more popular?
Well, I think people are beginning to understand it now, and sometimes people give up on medications, whether they're pills or whatever they're going through, and they want to try something new. And so it's an option for people nowadays, or vice versa. They don't get any heat, any relief from traditional medicine. They go to allopathic medicine. If it's done correctly, and I keep repeating correctly, because if people misuse this, then it's not going to be effective. And if it's done correctly, I think it'd be very effective. And I think it could be blended and incorporated into modern medicine, just like the Chinese medicine has done. You go to a Chinese physician, sometimes they'll ask you, do you want traditional or you want allopathic medicine? So you have a choice. And it empowers people to take care of their health. First of all, you want preventive medicine. You want to eat healthy, and that is also part of curanderismo. You eat healthy, you eat vegetables, fruits, and juicing is important. Now with blenders, you can use the right types of vegetables and fruits to juice and be healthier. So, and I think this is once it's done correctly, people realize that they can empower themselves to heal themselves and to keep healthy and not get sick.
I think it was watermelon was the one of the big juices that you talk about in the Coursera course, and sort of its value in cleansing.
Yes.
It is interesting to think of it as sort of it's a preventative form of healing as well as a healing you can use when illness does strike. So, well, excellent. That's really all the questions I have for you today. If people want to learn more about curanderismo and the practices, what's a good place for them to start? Where can they learn more? I mean, we've got the course, obviously. How do they get started in this practice?
Well, I think the wonderful thing about Coursera is that it is free. And even for a small fee, you can get a certificate also if you want that. But starting with Coursera, and now I'm working on a fourth class. I offer three Coursera classes. They're short, 6 week classes. And hopefully I'll finish my fourth class within the next month or so. And then if they really are serious about learning more, I offer a 2 week intensive class on the University of New Mexico campus. And they don't have to be university students. They can take it through continuing education, which costs a lot less. And if they can't do Coursera or my class, then they can read about it. I have a couple of books on the topic, and there's other people that are now writing about the topic. And some people get real serious, and they go to Mexico to study it even more at this school that I mentioned earlier, CEVEC, and they spend, you know, half a year there. A friend of mine, Tonita Gonzalez, who's teaching, helping me teach some of the classes, spent a year and a half in Mexico learning about the topic. So there's different ways to learn more about traditional medicine and taking care of yourself and empowering yourself to stay healthy. And some of these rituals are wonderful rituals if they're done correctly.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Yes, so our guest has been Professor Cheo Torres of the University of New Mexico. He has a book, Curandero, Life in Mexican Folk Healing, and I believe several other books as well. If people wanted to contact you, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, I can give you my email. It's Cheo, that's my nickname, C-H-E-O, at UNM, University of New Mexico, .edu. Again, Cheo, C-H-E-O, at UNM.edu, and I can give them a link to some of the web pages and Facebook, and they can learn more and find out, take advantage of some of the things that we offer.
Excellent. Thank you. And we'll also put a link to the Coursera course and the University of New Mexico on campus course as well in our show notes. Thank you so much, Professor Torres. We really appreciate you being on today.
Well, thank you, Corey. Maybe you can join us for some of our courses here.
I would love that. That would be absolutely up my alley, for sure. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and you have a good day.
You too.
One of the best known of the Mexican-American folk saints is Don Pedro Jaramillo, often referred to as Don Pedrito. He was so well known for his miraculous cures in his own lifetime that he became a living folk saint, which is extremely rare. His home near Falfurrias, Texas, has become a site for pilgrimage and healing, much as Lourdes in France or Chimayo in New Mexico have. Many written accounts of Jaramillo's cures and powers survive due to the work of his faithful followers, historians, and folklorists. Ruth Dodson recorded over 60 narratives of Don Pedrito's healings, and Richard Dorson, a folklorist, used Dodson's materials as well as some first-hand narratives to include a section on Don Pedrito in his book, Buying the Wind. Collections of Mexican-American folklore seldom fail to mention Jaramillo. Also, Cheo Torres of the University of New Mexico includes an extensive ethnographic biography of the folk saint in his book, Curandero, A Life in Mexican Folk Healing. What made Don Pedrito have such impact, and just what sorts of cures did he prescribe? Born sometime around the year 1830, the exact date is uncertain, in Jalisco, Mexico, Pedrito Jaramillo worked as a peasant class laborer for most of his youth. While he was still a young man, Jaramillo's mother contracted a debilitating illness, which sent the young man into a crisis of faith. He swore that if his mother did not recover, he would abandon his homeland and never return. Sadly, she died, and Jaramillo stuck to his word and left Jalisco, and would remain in exile until his death in 1907. He arrived in Texas around 1881 after working his way as a ranch hand, some accounts say herding sheep. Whatever the specific nature of his occupation, he spent his days in the saddle, but not comfortably. Cheo Torres says that he was not a very good cowboy, and he suffered a fall which broke his nose very badly. While he was blinded by the pain, and as someone who's taken a steel pipe to the bridge of the nose while not paying attention on an evening jog, I can sympathize with his plight, Jaramillo received a vision, which directed him to bury his face in the thick mud bordering a nearby river. This he did, and followed further instruction to leave the mud on for several days. When the mud finally came off, his nose was healed, although it remained crooked and bore a scar for the rest of his life. This vision also told him that such healing was not to be limited to his own use, but that he must take this gift, this don, as it is called in Curanderismo, and use it to heal others. This was the beginning of Don Pedrito's calling, and a lifetime of healing work. Don Pedrito eventually worked his way to a ranch known as Los Olmas, or the Elms, near Fulfarias, Texas, and it was there that he established his permanent base for curing the woes of those who came to visit him. And visit him they did. People flocked from all over the United States and Mexico to participate in Don Pedrito's cures. Often, his remedies would involve incredibly simple things like water or dirt, much like the mud he had originally used to heal himself during his transition from ordinary life into the life of a folk saint. Cheo Torres speculates that the Don may have felt that the props of the healings were less important than the belief in them, and so he selected things which were inexpensive and easily available to the poor souls who visited him. Don Pedrito did not only receive visitors in person, however, but often had extensive correspondences with those who sought his assistance by mail. He kept the stamps from his correspondences in a barrel in a small home, and by the end of his life, the stamps were worth more than $900. Those who came to Don Pedrito found he frequently knew what was wrong with them before they had even opened their mouths to tell him. Some people, however, tried to test the saint, and his trickster side would emerge on those occasions. One tale tells how a woman suffering from severe migraines only half believed in the Don, and so she sent someone in her place to acquire a cure. Don Pedrito felt the woman should have come in person, so he prescribed a cure for the woman, telling her she must have her head cut off and fed to her pigs. The woman flew into a rage upon hearing this, but the saint laughed at her anger. When she calmed down, she found her migraines had mysteriously and suddenly disappeared forever. Don Pedro never charged for his services, although he accepted gifts in kind from anyone who cared to give them. He believed that if he did charge, his power would leave him, and he would be able to do no more to help others. Don Pedrito died in 1907 at the Los Olmos Ranch, after passing on a portion of his healing power to a boy named Severiano Barrera, who in some tales was a boy given to Don Pedro in return for his healing by the child's mother and father. Don Pedrito never married or had any children of his own, but the Barreras are considered his descendants. The Los Olmos Ranch remains a shrine to Don Pedro and his miraculous cures, although his powers are as yet unofficial and not recognized by the Catholic Church. It is told that when he passed, he left some of his power with Severiano, but some of it was given to all who do work in his name. According to one account, to work with Don Pedro, you must have an altar with a picture of the Don and a picture of the Virgin, preferably the Virgin of Guadalupe, whom you may have heard about in our episode on Bright Mothers. One offers prayers to both the Virgin and Don Pedro before asking for their healing. We'll finish our look at the saint with a short folk tale about Don Pedrito, recorded by folklorist Ruth Dodson. The Marvelous Cure of a Shepherd. Monico Higanza was a shepherd who had been sick for some time. He took various home remedies, but they did him no good, and instead of getting better, he grew worse. His friends told him of the cures that Don Pedrito had made, and they advised him to go to the curandero, but as Monico lived 60 miles from Los Olmos, he thought it too difficult to make such a long trip. Finally, when he found that he had to get help, he borrowed a horse and set out for Los Olmos Ranch and Don Pedrito. He reached there the second day at dark. It had rained, and the creek was swollen. Don Pedrito's hut was near the bank. When Monico asked him for a remedy, Don Pedrito got up and took a piece of heavy canvas and a pillow. Telling the shepherd to come with him, he took him to the edge of the creek, where the water made an eddy. He threw the canvas into the eddy, which caught and extended it in the turn of the water. Then he tossed the pillow onto the canvas. The curandero picked up Monico and placed him on the canvas, which instead of sinking, supported him. All night Monico remained in this canvas bed, rocked by the movement into a pleasant sleep. In the morning, Don Pedrito came out and took him out of the water, sound and well. Monico was so thankful that he made Don Pedrito, who had never married and had no family, a present of one of his boys, to live with him and serve him in all that he might command.
En el cielito lindo, muy cerca del rancho grande, vuela una paloma negra, cantando currucucú con un coro de invitados. Lola Beltrán chava flores, Sara Garza y clavillazo. Y en una carpa celeste se escuchan las carcajadas, pues Cantinflas está bailando, Risa y Risa estaba el santo, y estaban en pleno enjuague Don Manolín y Chilinsky. Pero fíjate qué suave, Cote y Mantequilla están tomando charanda. Agustín está en el piano cantando con Pedro Vargas, y entre nubes y nopales se dan una buena pulqueada, la guayaba y la tostada.
A great deal of curanderismo is based on herbal healing and prayer, but there are also some aspects that have a more directly magical approach. Perhaps one of the oldest is one that offers luck and protection to the bearer, an amulet known as the Piedra Imán. Cheo Torres relates his encounter with the Piedra Imán in his book, Curandero, and I share it with you here. I told him that I did know what a Piedra Imán was. In fact, I did not. But for some reason, I had one of those foolish lapses that people sometimes have when they don't want to admit ignorance. When I said that I did know what it was, he smiled at me, and I immediately felt foolish. As I was walking out the door of his shop with my mysterious gift, the small black rock that was fast becoming a symbol of my foolishness, he called after me, "Don't you want the food for the rock?" Thoroughly confused now, I compounded my original mistake further. "Sure, I almost forgot about the food for the rock." The food for the rock was in a small plastic bag. It was a dark substance. The interior of the yerbería was so dark, I couldn't see it very well, and I was afraid to open the bag to find out just what the substance was. When I got home, I was ashamed to tell my wife and kids about the rock and feeding it. I kept imagining my children telling me to feed us instead of that silly rock. That and other fantasies having to do with my shame over having pretended to know something I did not kept playing through my mind, and I put the rock and its food aside for a while, and eventually, I forgot almost all about it. But within a month of this incident, when I had almost forgotten about the rock, I learned the secret of Piedra Imán. As I was doing research, I came across a periodical article written by Penelope Colbreth about Piedra Imán. The brief article is reproduced here. Piedra Imán is the traditional lodestone that for generations has been a symbol of good luck and prosperity in the Hispanic world. The piedra is intriguing because it grows when fed with the secret ingredients that keep it alive. In keeping with the old beliefs, if the stone continues to grow, it is an indication that your wishes will be granted. The tradition of the Piedra Imán goes back to the days of the Crusaders who discovered it in the Holy Land. They used it as a symbol of good luck when fighting in the Crusades. The conquistadores brought it to the New World also as a symbol of good luck and fortune. Since then, the peoples of Latin America, particularly in Mexico, have kept the tradition of the Piedra alive. There are many histories and beliefs in Latin America about the stone. What I also found out in the course of my researches was just exactly what was meant by feeding the rock. Piedra Imán is, as the article mentions, a lodestone, and therefore it has magnetic qualities. When you take little metal flakes, which are the food, and feed them to the Piedra Imán rock, they stick to it. Therefore, the rock appears to be growing as it accrues more and more little metal flakes. And, as the legend goes, your wishes are granted as the rock grows. Later still, I discovered that the Piedra Imán is the basis for what is called the Piedra Imán Curada, a cured lodestone in the form of an amulet, or amuleto, which is specifically prepared in a plastic bag containing a number of items or trinkets, including a small Piedra Imán rock. Each item in the bag is significant and represents the following. A gold-colored bead signifies the need for wealth or money. Oro para mi tesoro. A silver-colored bead, or silver taken from old jewelry, is for harmony, one's home. Plata para mi casa y hogar. A copper coin, such as a penny, is for the poor and needy. Cobre para el pobre. A red bead or red bean signifies coral to rid you of envy and all its bad. Coral para que se me quite la envidia y el mal. A horseshoe or a wire bent into the shape of a horseshoe to prosper in business or in personal work. La herradura para un buen negocio o trabajo. And a piece of lodestone for good luck and fortune. La piedra imán para la buena suerte y fortuna. People carry the plastic bag with all these items in their pockets or cars or hang the bag in their homes or businesses. Well, after I learned all of this, I took the Piedra Imán rock that Don Panchito had given me and applied some of the food from the bag to the rock, and sure enough, they stuck. When I discovered this, I forgot about feeling foolish and I felt instead that I was taking part in an ancient tradition passed down to me from noble forebears through folk tradition. I must admit, though, that when I think about this episode now, my face still grows hot with my remembered shame. I not only learned about another part of my tradition, I learned a lesson about playing the expert. Sometimes it is better to acknowledge our ignorance and to learn from our betters than it is to play at being the omniscient sage. Being a good teacher, after all, should always include being a good student. You can hear from Cheo's story that the Piedra Imán functions very much like the lodestone does in other forms of folk magic, such as hoodoo. Feeding the stone must be done regularly, and in the amulet form, each component takes on a specific role in the overall charm, with the Piedra Imán acting as a central binder in a way of drawing all the good power to you that you've invited with the charm. The charm's symbolism, gold for treasure, silver for harmony, a horseshoe charm of some kind for business fortune, all speak to the importance of the natural world within Mexican folk magic. Interestingly, all of the elements of the amulet except the red bean are minerals or metals of some kind, and even the red bead or bean obviously derives from coral, which is often used the way gemstones and minerals are. The power of the charm, then, seems to derive from its origins in the earth. Considering the important role of dirt and mud in curanderismo, as in Don Pedrito's cures, it is not too far of a speculation to say that the earth seems to have just as much healing power as the curandero, or that the curandero perhaps represents the meaning of heavenly healing and earthly power. That's my take on it, anyway. What do you think? Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed this brief look at the fascinating world of curanderismo. If you've not already done so, give some of the previous episodes a listen, including episode 67 on curanderismo with Carolina Gonzalez. You might also enjoy some of the episodes on things like folk Catholic practices, like episode 53 about Catholic charms, episode 34 on biblical magic, or our special episode on magical saints. You can find all those shows, as well as a ton of posts on similar topics, at our website, newworldwitchery.com. We invite you to follow us on our Twitter account, or on our Facebook page, or keep up with us via our Pinterest board, The Old Broom. And of course, if you like us and want to make more shows like this, you can head over to our Patreon page. $1 a month or more can make a big difference to us and earn you some pretty nifty rewards in the process. If you have feedback you'd like to share with us directly, emailing us at compassandkey@gmail.com is a great way to do it. Or you can leave us a message on our voicemail, 442-999-4824. That's 442-99-WITCH. However you choose to be a part of New World Witchery, we're grateful you're aboard, and hope that you will continue to enjoy the show and what we do here. For now, this is Corey, saying thanks for listening. Be well.
New World Witchery is a Patreon-supported podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors for this episode:
Diana Carino, Renee Otters,
E. Old Magic Shop, Raven Darkmoon,
Ivory, The Witch's View Podcast,
Sarah, Molly,
Jen Rue of Rue and Hyssop, Athena Beth,
Catherine,
Shannon,
Little Wren,
Corvus, and Jessica. Thanks so much.
Thank you.